The Worm Ouroboros by E.R. Edison. Chapter 7, Part 3. Gro said in Coran's ear, "The king hath found strange kindness in the cup."
"I think thou and I be clean out of fashion," answered Coran, whispering, "that we be not yet drunken. The cause whereof is that thou drinkest within measure, which is good. And me, this amethyst at my belt, keepeth sober, were I never so surfeit swelled with wine."
La Fierise said, "You are pleased to jest, O king. For my part, I had as lief have this muskmillion on my shoulders, as a head so blockish as to want ambition."
"If thou wert not our princely guest," said Corineus, "I had called that spoke in the right fashion of a little man. Witchland affecteth not such vaunts, but can afford to speak as our lord the king, in proud humility. Turkey-cocks do strut and gobble. Not so the eagle, who holdeth the world at his discretion."
"Pity on thee," cried the prince, "if this cheap victory turned thee so giddy. Goblins!" Corineus scowled. Corsus chuckled, saying to himself, but loud enough for all to hear,
"Goblins, quotha! They were small game had they been all. Eh, there it is, had they been all."
The king's brow was like a foul black cloud. The women held their breath. But Corsus, blandly insensible of these gathering thunders, beat time on the table with his cup, drowsily chanting to a most mournful air.
"When birds in water deep do lie, and fishes in the air do fly, when water burns and fire doth freeze, and oysters grow as fruits on trees."
A resounding hiccup brought him to a full close. The talk had died down, the lords of Witchland ill at ease studying to wear their faces to the bent of the king's looks. But Presmyra spake, and the music of her voice came like a refreshing shower.
"This song of my lord Corsus," she said, "made me hopeful for an answer to a question in philosophy. But Bacchus, you see, hath ta'en his soul into Elysium for a season, and I fear me nor truth nor wisdom cometh from his mouth to-night. And this was my question. Whether it be true that all animals of the land are in their kind in the sea? My lord Corineus, or thou, my princely brother, can you resolve me?"
"Why, so it is received, madam," said La Fierise, "and inquiry will show thee many pretty instances, as the sea-frog, the sea-fox, the sea-dog, the sea-horse, the sea-lion, the sea-bear. And I have known the barbarous people of Esamosia eat of a conserve of sea-mice, mashed and brayed in a mortar, with the flesh of that beast named Bos Marinus, seasoned with salt and garlic."
"Foe! Speak to me somewhat quickly," cried the Lady Sriva. "Ere in imagination I taste such nasty meat. Prithee, yon gold peaches and raisins of the sun as an antidote."
"Lord Gro will instruct thee better than I," said La Fierise. "For my part, albeit I think nobly of philosophy, yet have I little leisure to study it. Oft have I hunted the badger, yet never answered that question of the doctor's, whether he hath the legs of one side shorter than of the other. Neither know I, for all the lampreys I have eat, how many eyes the lamprey hath, whether it be 9 or 2. Presmyra smiled. "Oh, my brother, thou art too smoored, I fear me, in the dust of action and the field, to be at accord with these nice searchings. But be there birds under the sea, my lord Gro?" Gro made answer,
"'In rivers, certainly, though it be but birds of the air sojourning for a season. "'As I myself have found them in outer Impland, "'asleep in winter-time at the bottom of lakes and rivers, "'two together, mouth to mouth, wing to wing. "'But in the spring they revive again, "'and by and by are the woods full of their singing. "'And for the sea, there be true sea-cuckoos, "'sea-thrushes and sea-sparrows, and many more. "'It is passing strange,' said Zenambria.
"'Corsa sang,
"'When sorcerers do leave their charm, "'when spiders do the fly no harm,
Presmyra turned to Corin, saying, "'Was there not a merry dispute betwixt you, my lord, "'concerning the toad and the spider, "'thou maintaining that they do poisonously destroy one another, "'and my lord grow that he would show thee to the contrary?'
"'Twas even so, lady,' said Corin, "'and it is yet in controversy.'
Corsa sang,
"'And when the blackbird leaves to sing, "'and likewise serpents for to sting, "'then you may say, and justly too, "'the old world now is turned anew.'
"'And so sank back into bloated silence.
"'My lord the king,' cried Presmyra, "'I beseech you, give order for the ending of this difference "'between two of your council, ere it wax too dangerous heat. "'Let them be given a toad, O king, and spiders, without delay, "'that they may make experiment before this goodly company.'
"'Therewith all fell a-laughing, and the king commanded a thrall, "'who shortly brought fat spiders to the number of seven "'and a crystal wine-cup, and enclosed with them beneath the cup a toad, and set all before the king, and all beheld them eagerly.
"'I will wager 2 firkins of pale Permian wine to a bunch of radishes,' said Corin, "'that victory shall be given unto the spiders. "'Behold how without resistance they do sit upon his head and pass all over his body.'
Gro said,
"'Done!'
"'Thou wilt lose the wager, Corund,' said the king. "'This toad taketh no hurt from the spiders, "'but sitteth quiet out of policy, "'tempting them to security, "'that upon advantage he may swallow them down.'
"'While they watched, fruits were borne in, "'queen apples, almonds, pomegranates, and pistic nuts, "'and fresh bowls and jars of wine, "'and among them, a crystal flagon of the peach-colored wine of Cruthering, vintaged many summers ago in the vineyards that stretched southward toward the sea, from below the castle of Lord Brandoc the Ha. Corineus drank deep and cried,
"'Tis a good drink, this wine of Cruthering! Folks say it will be good cheap this summer!'
Whereat Lafayette shot a glance at him, and the king, marking it, said in Corineus's ear,
"'Wilt thou be prudent? Let not thy pride flatter thee to think aught shall avail thee, any more than my vilest thrall, if by thy doing this prince smell out my secrets.'
By then was the hour waxing late, and the women took their leave, lighted to the doors in great state by thralls with flamboys. In a while, when they were gone,
"'A plague of all spiders!' cried Corund. "'Thy toad hath swallowed one already!'
"'Two more,' said Gro. "'Thy theoric crumbleth apace, O Corund. "'He hath 2 at a gulp, and but 4 remain.' The Lord Corineus, whose countenance was now aflame with furious drinking, held high his cup, and catching the prince's eye,
"'Mark well, La Fieries!' he cried, "'a sign and a prophecy! First 1, next 2 at a mouthful, and early after that, as I think, the 4 that remain. art not afeard lest thou be found a spider when the brunt shall come?
"Hast drunk thyself horn-mad, Corineus?" said the king under his breath, his voice shaken with anger.
"He is as witty a marmalade-eater as ever I conversed with," said Lafayrees, "but I cannot tell what the dickens he means."
"That," answered Corineus, "which should make thy smirking face turn serious. I mean our ancient enemies, the haskardly mongrels of Demonland. First gulp, Goldry, taken heaven knows whither by the king's sending in a deadly scud of wind."
"The devil damn thee," cried the king. "What drunken babble is this?"
But the Prince Lafayrees waxed red as blood, saying,
"This it is, then, that lieth behind this hutter-mutter? And ye go to war with Demonland? Think not to have my help therein."
"We shall not sleep the worse for that," said Corineus. "Our mouth is big enough for such a morsel of marchpane as thou, if thou turn irksome."
"Thy mouth is big enough to blab the secretest intelligence, as we now most laughably approve," said Lafayrees. "Were I the king, I would draw lobster's whiskers on thy skin for a tipsy and a prattling popinjay."
"An insult!" cried the Lord Corineus, leaping up. "I would not take an insult from the gods in heaven. Reach me a sword, boy. I will make bestrian cutworks in his guts."
"Peace on your lives," said the king in a great voice, while
Corund went to Corineus and Gro to the prince to quiet them.
"Corineus is wounded in the wrist and cannot fight, and belike his brain is fevered by the wound.
Heal him, then, of this carving the goblins gave him, and I will carve him like a capon," said the prince.
"Goblins!" said Corineus fiercely. "No, vile fellow, the best swordsman in the world gave me this wound. Had it been thou that stood before me, I had cut thee into steaks that art caponed already."
But the king stood up in his majesty, saying, "Silence, on your lives!" And the king's eyes glittered with wrath, and he said,
"For thee, Corineus, not thy hot youth and rebellious blood, nor yet the wine thou hast swilled into that greedy belly of thine, shall mitigate the rigor of my displeasure. Thy punishment I reserve unto tomorrow. And thou, Lafayrees, look thou bear thyself more humbly in my halls. Overpert was the message brought me by thine herald at thy coming hither this morning, and too much it smacked of a greeting from an equal to an equal, calling thy tribute a gift, though it and thou and all thy principality are mine by right to deal with as seems me good. Yet did I bear with thee, unwisely as I think, since thy pertness, nourished by my forbearance, springeth up yet rancor at my table, and thou insultest and brawlest in my halls. Be advised, lest my wrath forge thunderbolts against thee."
The Prince Lafayrees answered and said, "Keep frowns and threats for thine offending thralls, O king, since me they affright not, and I laugh them to scorn. Nor am I careful to answer thine injurious words, since well thou knowest my old friendship unto thine house, O king, and unto Witchland, and by what bands of marriage I am bound in love to the Lord Corund, to whom I gave my lady sister. If it suit not my stomach to proclaim like a servile minister thy suzerainty, yet needest thou not to carpet this, since thy tribute is paid thee, ay, and in overmeasure. But unto Demonland am I bound, as all the world knoweth, and sooner shalt thou prevail upon the lamps of heaven to come down and fight for thee against the demons than upon me. And unto Corineus, that so boasteth, I say that Demonland hath ever been too hard for you witches. Goldry Blishko and Brandok Daha have shown you this. This is my counsel unto thee, O king, to make peace with Demonland. My reasons? First, that thou hast no just cause of quarrel with them. Next, and this should sway thee more, that if thou persist in fighting against them, it will be the ruin of thee and of all Witchland. The king bit his fingers with signs of wonderful anger, and for a moment's time no sound was in that hall. Only Corin spake privately to the king, saying, "Lord, oh, for all sakes, swallow your royal rage. You may whip him when my son Hakmon returneth, but until then he outnumbers us, and your own party, so overwhelmed but with wine that, trust me, I would not adventure the price of a turnip on our chances if it come to fighting." Troubled at heart was Corund, for well he knew how dear beyond account his lady wife held the keeping of the peace betwixt La Fieries and the witches. In this moment, Corsus, somewhat roused in an evil hour, out of lethargy, by the loud talk and movement, began to sing.
When all the prisons hereabout have jostled all their prisoners out, because indeed they have no cause to keep 'em in by common laws.
Whereat Corineus, in whom wine and quarrelling and the king's rebukes had lighted a fire of reckless and outrageous malice, before which all counsels of prudence or policy were dissipated like wax in a furnace, shouted loudly,
"Wilt see our prisoners, prince, in the old banquet hall, to prove thyself an ass?"
"What prisoners?" cried the prince, springing to his feet. "Hell's furies! I am weary of these dark equivocations, and will know the truth."
"Why wilt thou rage so beastly?" said the king. "The man is drunk. No more wild words."
"Thou canst not daff me so. I will know the truth," said La Fieries.
"So thou shalt," said Corineus. "This it is, that we witches be better men than thou and thy hen-hearted pixies, and better men than the accursed demons. No need to hide it further. Two of that brood we have laid by the heels, and nailed 'em up on the wall of the old banquet hall, as farmers nail up weasels and polecats on a barn door. And there shall they bide till they be dead, Jus and Brandoc Daha."
"Oh, most villainous lie," said the king. "I'll have thee hewn in pieces."
But Corineus said,
"I nurse your honor, O king. We must no longer skulk before these pixies."
"Thou diest for it," said the king, "and it is a lie."
Now was dead silence for a space. At last the prince sat down slowly. His face was white and drawn, and he spake unto the king slowly and in a quiet voice.
"O king, that I was somewhat hot with you, forgive me, and if I have omitted any form of allegiance due to you, think rather that in my blood it is to chafe at such ceremonies than that I had any lack of friendship unto you, or ever dreamed of questioning your overlordship. Aught that you shall require of me, and that lieth with mine honor, aught of ceremony or fealty, will I with joy perform. And, save against Demonland, is my sword ready against your enemies. But here, O king, tottereth a tower ready to fall athwart our friendship, and pash it to pieces. It is known to you, O king, and to all the lords of Witchland, that my bones were whitening these 6 years in Implin the Moor, if Lord Jus had not saved me from the barbarous imps that followed Fax Fay Faz, who besieged me 4 months with my small following, shut up in Lida Nanguna. My friendship shall you have, O King, if you yield me up my friends.
But the king said, I have not thy friends.
Show me then the old banquet hall, said the prince.
The king said, I will show it thee anon.
I will see it now, said the prince, and he rose from his seat.
I will dissemble with thee no longer, said the king. I do love thee well, but when thou askest me to yield up to thee Jus and Brandok Daha, thou askest a thing all Pixieland and thy dear heart's blood were unable to purchase from me. These be my worst enemies. Thou knowest not at what cost of toil and danger I have at last laid hand on them. And now, let not thy hopes make thee an unbeliever, when I swear to thee that Jus and Brandok Daha shall rot and die in prison.
And for all his gentle speeches, and offers of wealth, and rich advantage, and upholding in peace and war, might not Lafiris shake the king. And the king said,
Forbear, Lafiris, or thou wilt vex me. They must rot.
So when the prince Lafiris saw that he might not move the king by soft words, he took up his fair crystal goblet, egg-shaped, with three claws of gold, to stand withal welded to a collar of gold about its middle, bossed with topazes, and hurled it at Gorice the king, so that the goblet smote him on the forehead, and the crystal was brassed asunder with the force of the blow, and the king's forehead laid open, and the king struck senseless.
Therewith was huge uproar in the banquet hall, nor would Coran that any should have speedier hand therein than he, but catching up his two-edged sword and crying, Look to the king, Gro! Here's distressful revels! He leapt upon the table. And his sons likewise, and Galandus, and the other witches seized their weapons, and in like manner did Lafiris and his men, and there was battle in the great hall in Carcy.
Corineus, whose left hand only might as now wield weapon, even so sprang forth in most gallant wise, calling upon the prince with many vile words to abide his onset. But the fumes of unbridled potations that being flown to his brain had made him frantic mad, wrought in his legs more foggily, dulling their wonted nimbleness. And his foot sliding in a puddle of spilt wine, he fell backward a grievous fall, striking his head against the polished table. And Corsus, that was now well-nigh speechless and quite stupefied with drink, so that a baby might tell as well as he might what meant this hubbub, reeled, cup in hand, shouting,
Drunkenness is better for the body than physic! Drink always, and you shall never die!
So shouting, he was smitten square in the mouth by a breast of veal flung at him by Eleron of Pixieland, the captain of the prince's bodyguard, and so fell like a hog athwart Corineus, and there lay without sense or motion. Then were the tables overset, and wounds given and taken, and swiftly ran the tide of vantage against the witches. For, albeit the pixies were none such great soldiers as they of Witchland, yet this served them mightily, that they were well-nigh sober, and their foes, as so many casks filled with wine, staggering and raving, for the most part, from their long tippling and quaffing. Nor did Corin's amethyst avail him thoroughly, but the wine clogged his veins, so that he waxed scant of breath, and his strokes lighter and slower than they were wont. Now, for the love he bare his sister Presmyra, and for his old kindness' sake for Witchland, the prince charged his men to fight only for the overpowering of the witches, slaying none, if so it might be,
and on their lives to look to it that the Lord Corin took no hurt. And when they had fairly gotten the mastery, Lafayrees made certain of his folk take jars of wine, and therewith salves Corin and his men most lustily in the face, while others held them at weapons point, until by the power of the wine, both within and without, they were well brought under. And they barricaded the great doorway of the hall with the benches and table-tops and heavy oaken trestles, and Lafayrees charged Eleron hold the door with the most of his following, and set guards without each window, that none might come forth from the hall. But the prince himself took flamboys, and went six in company to the old banquet hall, overpowered the guard, brake open the doors, and so stood before Lord Jus and Lord Brandoc de Ha, that hung shackled to the wall side by side. Something dazzled they were in the sudden torchlight. But Lord Brandoc de Ha spake and hailed the prince, and his mocking, haughty, lazy accents were scarcely touched with hollowness, for all his hunger-starving and long watching, and the cark and care of his affliction.
"Lafayrees," he said, "day ne'er broke till now, and methought ye were yonder false fitchews, fostered in filth and fen, the spawn of Witchland returned again to fleer and flout at us."
Lafayrees told them how things had gone, and he said, "Occasion gallopeth apace. Upon this bargain do I loose you, that ye come incontinently with me out of Carcy, and seek no revenge to-night upon the witches." Just said yea to this, and Brandoc de Ha laughed, saying, "Prince, I so love thee, I could refuse thee nothing, were it shave half my beard, and go in fustian till harvest time, sleep in my clothes, and discourse pious nothing 7 hours a day with my lady's lap-dog. This night we be utterly thine. An instant only bear with us. This fare shows too good to rest untasted after so much looking on. It were discourteous, too, to leave it so."
Therewith, their chains being now stricken off, he eat a great slice of turkey, and 3 quails boned and served in jelly, and Jus 12 plover's eggs and a cold partridge. Lord Brandoc de Ha said,
"I prithee break the eggshells, Jus, when the meat is out, lest some sorcerer should prick or write thy name thereon, and so mischief thy person."
And pouring out a stoup of wine, he quaffed it off, and filling it again, "Perdition catch me if this is not mine own wine of Crothering. Saw any a carefuller host than King Gorice?" And he pledged Lord Jus in the second cup, saying,
"I will drink with thee next in Carcy, when the King of Witchland and all the lords thereof are slain."
Thereafter they took their weapons that lay by on the table, set there to distress their souls, and with little expectation they should so take them up again. And glad at heart, albeit somewhat stiff of limb, they went forth with Lafayrees from that banquet hall. When they were come into the courtyard, Jus spake and said, "Herein might honour hold us back, even hadst thou made no bargain with us, Lafayrees. For great shame it were to us, and we fell upon the lords of Witchland when they were drunk and unable to meet us in equal battle. But let us, ere we be gone from Carcy, ransack this hold for my kinsman Goldry Blishko, since for his sake only, and in hope to find him here, we fared on this journey."
"So you touch no other thing but only Goldry, if ye shall find him, I am content," said the prince.
So, when they had found keys, they ransacked all Carcy, even to the dread chamber where the king had conjured, and the vaults and cellars below the river. But it availed not. And as they stood in the courtyard in the torchlight, there came forth on a balcony the Lady Presmyra in her nightgown, disturbed by this ransacking. Ethereal as a cloud she seemed, pavilioned in the balmy night, as a cloud touched by the exhalations of the unrisen moon.
"What transformation is this?" said she. "Demons loose in the court?" "Content thee, dear heart," said the prince. "Thy man is safe, and all else beside, as I think, save that the king hath a broken head, the which I lament, and will without question soon be healed. They lie all in the banquet hall to-night, being too sleepy-sodden with the feast to take to their chambers." Presmyra cried, "My fears are fallen upon me. Art thou broken with Witchland?" "That may I not forejudge," he answered. "Tell them to-morrow that naught I did in hatred, and naught but what I was by circumstance enforced to. For I am not such a coward, nor so great a villain, as leave my friends caged up, while strength is left me to work for their setting free." "You must straightway forth from Carcy," said Presmyra, "and that of the instant. My stepson Hacmon, which was sent to gather strength to awe thee, if need were, rideth by now from the south with a great company. Thy horses are fresh, and ye may well outdistance the king's men if they ride after you. If thou wilt not yet raise up a river of blood betwixt us, be gone."
"Why, fare thee well, then, sister,
and doubt it not. These rifts tween me and Witchland shall soon be patched up and forgot." So spake the prince with a merry voice, yet grieved at heart, for well he weened the king should never pardon him that blow, nor his robbing him of his prey. But she said sadly, "Farewell, my brother, and my heart tells me I shall never see thee more. When thou tookst these from prison, thou didst dig up 2 mandrakes, shall bring sorrow and death to thee, and to me, and to all Witchland." The prince was silent. But Lord Jus bowed to Presmyra, saying,
"Madam, these things be on the knees of fate. But imagine not that while life and breath be in us, we shall leave to uphold the prince thy brother. His foes be our foes for this night's sake."
"Thou swearest it?" she said.
He answered, "Madam, I swear it unto thee and unto him."
The Lady Presmyra withdrew sadly to her chamber, and in short space she heard their horse hoofs on the bridge, and looking forth, beheld where they galloped on the way of kings, dim in the coppery light of a waning moon rising over Pixieland. So sat she by the window of Corin's lofty bedchamber, gazing through the night, long after her brother and the lords of the Demonland and her brother's men were ridden beyond her seeing, long after their last hoofbeat had ceased to echo on the road. In a while, fresh horse hoofs sounded from the south, and a noise as of many riding in company, and she knew it was young Hacmon back from Permio. The song in praise of Presmyra is by Thomas Carew, 1598-1639. I sang it to the tune of "Come Live With Me and Be My Love." Corin's Song of the Chine comes from An Antidote to Melancholy, published in 1661. I sang it to the tune of Heart of Oak. Corsus's "Whene'er I Bib the Wine Down" is Edison's translation from the Greek of Anacreonta number 25. I sang it, sort of, to the tune of Fair Maid of Amsterdam. Corsus's other ditties are from the Roxburgh Ballads, collected in 1774. I sang it to the tune of In Nottingham Town. All these tunes are in the public domain. End of chapter 7.